Kevin Hatchard, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast.
And I'm Jake Robson. Here's what's coming up this week.
There are two gigantic football matches taking place on Saturday as West Ham and Blackpool do battle for a place in the Premier League, and Chelsea and Bayern Munich bid to become European champions.
There's an all-Irish clash in rugby's Heineken Cup, but will Ulster or Leinster be crowned European champions?
And the Methuselah of the racing world, Charlie Owens, will be here to discuss the weekend's big races, and he'll also bring us something a little bit different. Well, we'll start with the first of Saturday's massive football matches, the game at Wembley, the championship playoff final between West Ham and Blackpool. West Ham, favourites to go up all season, really, and Blackpool, of course, in their second playoff final in three seasons. It's a fascinating game, isn't it?
It is. Well, the stat that I like that it's sort of been bandied around is that it's not very often that the team finishing third actually makes it up in the playoffs, and it's actually normally the team that finished where Blackpool finished, because they got momentum to sort of take them through.
Yeah,
they finished strongly. And of course, wasn't that where Blackpool finished last time they were in the playoffs?
Yeah, they certainly weren't in the third place. No, they came with a late surge and managed to go all the way through. Yeah, it's a good point, because West Ham, of course, were everybody's favourites, and in a way they failed at the end of the season, because obviously they wanted to get automatic promotion. They've had to settle for a playoff place. That said, they looked pretty impressive against Cardiff in those two legs, didn't they?
They did. But, they've had a decent season. But, I mean, Blackpool obviously have got that playoff experience. They know, more, I guess, what it takes to kind of win at this stage. West Ham, this is new territory for them, really, isn't it?
It is. And, a lot of these players, of course, are used to playing in the Premier League, although he has brought in some players who are desperate to play in the Premier League for the first time. Guys like Nicky Maynard will be keen to make his mark in the top flight. What's interesting as well is that obviously in the league, West Ham have beaten Blackpool home and away. Now, Sam Allardyce says that will be a confidence boost for his side, but it won't be the be-all and end-all, because this effectively is a one-off game.
Yeah, but they've got to be favourites going into it. I mean, it's massive, this one, really. It's bigger for West Ham, unfortunately, for any Blackpool fans listening. It's they have to get back in the Premier League. It's all they've talked about all season. You know, the owners, David Gold, David Sullivan. It's when we get back into the Premier League. And quite frankly, with the style of football that they've played, I don't think the fans have been that happy this season. So if they don't get back into the Premier League, you could kind of see maybe a sort of fans revolt there against Sam Allardyce.
Yes. Do you think if they don't go up on Saturday, do you think that could be a fatal blow for Allardyce?
Well, you just never know, really, do you? I mean, you've seen, Kenny Dalglish get sacked after winning a trophy this season. I mean, that's obviously another issue. But, yeah, I think you just don't know with David Gold and David Sullivan. They do strange things. I mean, you'd think you've got to give him another season. But then on the other hand, he hasn't done what I guess they wanted him to do, which was get them up. So on balance, yeah, maybe he will go if they don't get promoted.
Just finally, in terms of style of play, if Blackpool can get the opening goal, they're obviously a more attacking side than West Ham by nature. If Blackpool get the opening goal, is that going to be best for the neutral, because that will open the game up?
Yeah, I mean, it'll open the game up. I reckon the West Ham fans could certainly start sort of turning on their team very quickly if it all goes pear-shaped. They were there just because of what's been happening this season and their disapproval of the way that Allardyce has been getting them to play football.
Well, let's now hear from the West Ham boss, Sam Allardyce.
We're the favourites with all the pressure on us, so we have to handle that as we've done most of the season and deliver. Won't be easy. Treat them with the utmost respect and make sure we expose their weaknesses that they have in the side if we possibly can, as early as we possibly can.
Well, high stakes in that one, and high stakes in the evening game as well at Munich's Allianz Arena. Bayern Munich get to play in their own stadium, and they will take on Chelsea for the right to be named as European champions. This one absolutely fascinating, because Bayern have that home advantage, obviously slightly different because it won't be the majority of their fans attending, but it is still a big advantage, isn't it?
Oh, of course. Well, they know the dressing room and all the sort of little ins and outs of the stadium and the build up to the game. It's just like a home game for them, isn't it? I mean, it's been interesting because as soon as we knew that these teams were going to be in the final, everyone was very quick to sort of come out and say, "Oh, it's going to be tough for Chelsea." But in the last week, Chelsea or Bayern have kind of slipped back in the sort of favourite stakes, if you like, since that defeat to Dortmund last week, heavy defeat in the cup final. So I think, yeah, it's kind of like both teams are trying to be the underdog in this one.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, Di Matteo said that it's 50-50 at best for his team, but he knows that Dortmund, it's interesting you mentioned that German Cup final, because what Borussia Dortmund have done for teams is they've shown the blueprint of how you can get results against Bayern. And the way you do that is you press high up the field, you disrupt their rhythm in midfield. They like to dominate possession. They like to be able to have around 70-75% of possession and feed the ball out to the likes of Robin and Ribery. When you get in their faces and you disrupt them in midfield, they don't like it. And the other way as well is that you put pressure on the centre-backs. I don't rate Jerome Boateng. I think he's an overrated player. I think he switches off in terms of concentration. They'll miss Holger Badstuber. Daniel van Buyten is experienced and physically he's big, but I think he's slow on the turn. And I think if Didier Drogba can get up against those two early, I think if Chelsea can get the ball to him often and quickly, I think he could cause them some real problems. So even though Bayern do have that advantage of playing in familiar surroundings, I think there are clear areas where Chelsea can exploit Bayern's weaknesses.
Yeah, I mean, Drogba obviously is the obvious one. I mean, he's given the world's best problems. So basically, these guys, they're good, but they're certainly not the world's best. So it's definitely an area where they can exploit. I mean, just sort of looking at Chelsea again, it is going to be difficult for them. I think, I know both teams have got suspensions, but I think Chelsea's are, I think they're slightly more key, their suspensions.
Yeah, they do have some big players missing, don't they? I think Ramirez has been one of their best players this season. I think that's a huge blow that he's out. Of course, he scored that stunning goal at the Nou Camp in the semi-finals. Ivanovic has been one of their most consistent defenders. That's a big blow. There is good news that David Luiz and Gary Cahill look as though they're going to be fit for the final. But with David Luiz, you never know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, no, and neither of them have played for a while. I mean, Luiz hasn't played. Cahill hasn't played since the Barcelona game, and Luiz was before that.
Yeah, he was injured in the cup semi-final against Tottenham.
Right, exactly.
A hamstring problem.
So, and they haven't played since then. Yeah, they've been in training. It's all about match sharpness, and they don't really have any cover. You know, if they can't last, say we were into extra time or something
right.
like that, you can't see them lasting, you know, extra time as well. So I think the cover's going to be an issue for them as well.
It's fascinatingly poised. It's quite good to go into a major final not really knowing who's going to win it, because I think you're right. I don't think there is an overwhelming favourite. Just finally on this, before we move on to the rugby, Roberto Di Matteo, obviously, we don't know what his position will be at the end of the season. He obviously hopes to continue in the job. If they don't win the final, do you think he's still got a decent chance of being named as permanent manager?
Not at all.
Interesting. Okay.
If they don't win, I think Roberto Di Matteo is a goner. I think he might be a goner anyway. Who knows? But I think if they don't win, I mean, there's absolutely, you know, I mean, he's had a good end to the season. I can't see him staying if they don't win. It's not in Abramovich's makeup. I mean, managers have been sacked for a lot less at Chelsea.
So you think he could be another Avram Grant, possibly, to the final?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, if Mourinho can get sacked after winning two titles back-to-back, FA Cups, Carling Cups, then, you know, anyone can get sacked, really, can't they?
And if he wins, can you fire a manager who's just won the European Cup?
Well, that's the difficult question. If he wins, you'd say no. I mean, look at Rafa Benitez. He had a long period of grace at Liverpool after they won. I mean, look at Kenny Dalglish. You know, he's had 20 years of credit in the bank.
Yeah.
But Roman Abramovich is just a different proposition, isn't it? You just don't know.
We'll move on to another fascinating final, because it's an all-Irish clash in rugby's Heineken Cup final at Twickenham. Ulster will take on Leinster, who are looking to be crowned European champions for the third time in four seasons. And these two have done pretty well in the knockout phase, haven't they?
Well, they have. Ulster, of course, won at Munster, and they also beat Edinburgh in a tight game in the knockout phase. Leinster, of course, the reigning champions. They thrashed Cardiff Blues and then won in France at Clermont-Auvergne. And they also, they'll have memories, good memories of that final last year where they, I think at half-time, they were down and out of it.
Yeah, they were. They came back against Northampton, a couple of tries from Johnny Sexton, I think, and a load of points from his boot as well. It's an interesting one because Leinster have the pedigree in terms of they've got those two wins. They won in 2011 and they won in 2009 as well. So they have that big match experience. Ulster probably go into it as underdogs for that reason. There's an interesting kind of, not inferiority complex, but there have been a lot of comments this week from Ulster about how they're sick of being seen as the third best province in Ireland behind Munster and Leinster. Andrew Trimble, their winger, said that they'll be motivated by jealousy. So there is very much a kind of inferiority complex there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And I think the fact that they haven't been to a final for so long makes a big difference. You know, as we said, Leinster have been before recently.
Yeah.
And not to add to that, they had a great win last year. So it's kind of just sort of takes it up another level.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you don't want to be having inferiority complexes in sports, and you don't want to be letting your opponents know that you've got them either.
No, absolutely. And Ulster, of course, a big reason for wanting to win. Brian McLaughlin, their coach, signs off at the end of this season. So it's his final match. What a send-off that would be. But you talk about big game players. Ulster do have, you know, big performers like Ruan Pienaar, guys like that, and some very experienced Ireland internationals like Stephen Ferris. But Leinster have Johnny Sexton, who we mentioned, who got all those points in last year's final, and Brian O'Driscoll, who is going to be fit. He says that he's shaken off that knee injury from this week. What a big player to have in your ranks.
Well, what a big player. And you just wonder how much longer he's going to go on for. I mean, he's certainly not young anymore. But it's also a mental thing, having him in the team, as opposed to not having him in the team. You know, it's a massive, the other, you know, Ulster will look at the team sheet if he's on it, and they will be more apprehensive than if he's not, and it'll give him a boost if he's not. So it's massive for Leinster if he plays.
So Ulster looking for their first Heineken Cup win since 1999, and Leinster looking for their third Heineken Cup win in 4 years. It should be a classic encounter. OK, well, now with a look ahead to the weekend's racing and something that's not sport but is competitive, it's Charlie Owens.
Well, thanks for the intro, Kev, and now we can get on with the real sport, which is horse racing. And Saturday is a massive day in the world of racing as Frankel, the world's highest rated racehorse, makes his reappearance at Newbury in the Lock-In Stakes. He's won all his 9 races, and they include 5 Group 1s, the 2000 Guineas, St James Palace Stakes, Sussex Stakes, Queen Elizabeth II Stakes. He's quite a horse. He's scared off most of the rivals, but one that does take him on is a horse called Accelebration from the Aidan O'Brien stable, but Frankel has beaten him on the 2 occasions they did meet. So good luck to Frankel. Other news is the betting for the Derby in the Oaks is hotting up. There's been plenty of trials. They're kind of stepping stone races, bringing the horses up from a mile to a mile and a quarter to a mile and a half, which is the Derby and the Oaks distance. The Oaks is the race for fillies that takes place on Friday the 1st of June. There are 4 horses vying for favouritism at the head of the market. 2 from Ireland, Maybe and Kiss, both trained by Aidan O'Brien. And then there's one from William Haggis Yard called Vow. She won the Lingfield Oaks trial very easily last week. And the most recent addition to this list is a filly trained by John Gosden called The Fogue. Now, she finished 4th in the 1,000 Guineas, and on Wednesday at York, she won the Musidora, which is run over a mile and a quarter, and she won it very readily indeed. She looks a serious player. So it's a very competitive-looking Oaks. That can't be said of the Derby, where Camelot, who won the 2,000 Guineas and is trained by Aidan O'Brien, is as short as even money to win this year's Epsom Derby. But there is another horse that has just recently entered the calculations, a horse called Bonfire. He's trained by Andrew Balding, son of Ian Balding, who won the Derby with the Great Mill Reef. He enters calculations having won the Dante Stakes at York on Thursday. He had to battle on really strongly and showed a great aptitude for a fight. He's trading around the 8-1 mark. So that's the racing news now. And just to mention something slightly quirky, Mencap, the UK's largest charity supporting people with learning disabilities, are holding the world's first ever Global English Language Digital Spellathon Championship between the 21st and 27th of May. The Spellathon is available in an interactive online format with 3D graphics and the voice of Stephen Fry. It's open to schools, colleges, universities and individuals of all ages. And as well as raising funds for MenCap, a participating child school will benefit by receiving 25% of the money that child raises. Now, for more information on this, you can go to spellathon.net. And that ends the racing rant for this week's podcast.
Well, many thanks to Charlie and to Jake from myself and the rest of the team here at the Ultimate Sports Podcast. It's goodbye for this week. We'll catch up with you again next week.